The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Pat Kenny here. Before we get to today's podcast, I wanted to offer you my sincere thanks for your loyalty and your company over the past 12 years plus of mornings on News Talk. But fear not, I hope you'll be able to join me on weekend mornings from 10 a.m. starting in March. Now, we're really excited about the evolution of the show, which you can continue to follow on this podcast feed. So rest easy, you don't have to change a thing. But until we meet again this spring, I've delved into the archives to bring you some of the most engaging and thought-provoking pieces that I've had the pleasure to bring you over these past dozen years. So make sure you continue to follow The Pat Kenny Show on the Go Loud app and wherever you get your podcasts. A lot about the rise of authoritarianism around the world, but what we may not hear is how countries like Russia and China are using the internet and universities, things the West value as tools to share democratic ideals. Alexander Dukalski is associate professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, and he joins me now. Alexander, good morning and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we are familiar, I suppose, from our history books of authoritarianism in the early and mid 20th centuries. But in our current century, the 21st century, when do you detect the rise of authoritarianism, first of all?
Yeah, so I think in the 1990s and early 2000s, we were in an era where democracy was spreading globally and liberal norms were being promoted globally. And what we saw is that authoritarian states learned how to use globalization and interconnectedness for their own advantage. On top of this, the United States and other liberal democracies made a series of catastrophic mistakes, like the invasion of Iraq and the financial crisis. So really, after around 2010, 2012, we saw the rise of authoritarianism and a deepening of existing authoritarianism around the world. This was around the time when Xi Jinping came to power. Putin decisively, you know, began his escapades in Ukraine. Erdogan in Turkey changed to a presidential system, and the list goes on. Right
now, the question is: how many of them started off being properly democratically elected, and then decided to pursue the autocratic path?
That's right. So you see this pretty frequently, where a leader is elected, and they can gradually chip away at democratic institutions and norms and consolidate their own power. So this is obviously, a huge worry in the United States right now.
I mean, you can look at Putin properly elected, and then after maybe when Medvedev replaced him, and then he came back, you can be quite sure that none of the elections after that were fair. Duterte in the Philippines, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Orban in Turkey. You mentioned Orban in Hungary, Erdogan in Turkey. All of these people, did they have a genuine democratic mandate to begin?
You know, this is often the case that there is a genuine democratic mandate, but institutions of democracy have to create guardrails around leaders. I mean, that's the essence of democracy, is that we may not like a leader that's elected, but we know in a few years' time we'll have a new, a chance to change leaders. And so it's very important for democratic institutions to create guardrails around abuses of power. And in many of those cases, they failed.
Now, we're always being told in Ireland that the hard right is a very small fraction of those active in politics. And although we have to be vigilant, we are not in acute danger. Do you see examples of other countries where they thought that too, and yet there was a growth in authoritarian imperatives among ordinary people?
You know, I think when we think about it in terms of a country turning authoritarian or not, we're slightly missing the point. I think what we're trying to show is that authoritarian states have learned to use globalization to their advantage, and that they infiltrate those norms infiltrate areas that we might not even think of as political. You know, areas like media, areas like universities, sports, consumer behavior, so that the financial power and reach of authoritarian states, it's not so much that it's going to turn a place, you know, from the democratic column to the authoritarian column, so to speak, but that it's going to change our behaviors and our ability to engage in not only democracy, but also to engage in critique of authoritarianism.
Now, the United States was operating, I suppose, that kind of soft power influence for all the 20th century, I suppose. I was one of those students who went to the United States in the 1970s and, you know, learned to love the United States, loved what it stood for. Even though the Vietnam War was going on, you know, the American way was very attractive. And even with the J-1 visa program that many Irish kids go on every summer, they get, well, they used to before this summer, they got to know the United States and learned to love it and therefore became, if you like, instinctively pro-American. Is that what's going on with the Confucius Institutes?
So this issue of, you know, what's often called soft power, which is basically states trying to showcase their positive side and get people to support what they do. It's very interesting because there are some states that will run programs and facilitate people-to-people exchanges, and that's great and wonderful, and cultural exchange is very important. So, you know, a program like the Erasmus program in Europe, for example, is very good. Other states take a much more centrally organized, state-driven approach and really kind of control those relationships and create political red lines around those relationships. So what we talk about in the book is that a higher education institutes, you know, universities, face funding shortfalls at home, basically. And so they're incentivized to go market themselves to foreign international students and set up branch campuses abroad. And this inevitably has impacts on the political atmosphere and the political red lines that universities or higher education institutes are willing to or not willing to cross.
Now, in your book, Dictating the Agenda, the Authoritarian Resurgence in World Politics, people might have thought in the United States, to which you referred a few minutes ago, as having all the guardrails necessary. You know, you've got the separation of powers, the Supreme Court and the whole court system. You've got Congress and you've got the executive branch, the presidency. So it doesn't matter how well you design such a system with all the guardrails. It turns out such a system can be subverted, as we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, so our book went to press in November 2024, the month Trump was reelected. And of course, once a book goes to press, you know, there's a limit to what you can change. But since that time, we've really reflected on how the United States is accelerating a lot of the trends that we are identifying right now. So in terms of global democracy promotion, the United States is really damaging it based on its own basically failing to be a positive example, right? So this has been the case really since the storming of the Capitol in January 2020. But also the U.S. is now not only advocating democracy promotions. So, you know, the U.S. aid cuts got a lot of attention, rightly so, for the humanitarian programs that went away. But so did the pro-democracy programs that were bundled in kind of to U.S. aid funding. On top of all of that, the U.S. is now increasingly willing to use its power, sanctioning power and financial power, to help out illiberal allies. So we're seeing the United States put sanctions on Brazilian Supreme Court members, for example, for their investigations into Trump's political ally, Bolsonaro.
But so, I mean, that is an element of projection on his part. He sees the fate of Bolsonaro as perhaps predicting his own fate someday.
Perhaps so. I mean, I can't get inside his head, but what we see is that there was a time when the United States, you know, some might argue hypocritically or disingenuously, but nonetheless, they promoted democracy abroad with real financial backing. So for civil society groups and media groups and the like. And those days, at least under the current administration, are gone. And not only are they gone, but some programs are now being used to promote illiberal aims.
And the question then is, once you establish this kind of trend, and Trump did begin it in his first term, but now you have MAGA. He couldn't actually do what he's doing without a big rump of support, which is MAGA, which might be around maybe 35 to 40% of the electorate saying, we love what you're doing.
He has a rump of support, as you say, but you know, writ large, he's a very unpopular president. So that makes elections and voter turnout and the like very important in 2026 and 2028 and beyond.
Do you believe the elections will be fair?
I believe that the current administration will attempt to subvert or manipulate elections. I mean, they tried it in 2020 already, but that shouldn't deter voters from going to the polls. It's kind of the only way to do it.
Alexander Dukalski, Associate Professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Alexander, thank you very much for joining.